So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe Ferrero Rocher je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,99 Euro. Außerdem Mionetto Prosecco Spumante Doc je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 5,99 Euro. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
And now, Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
This virus, it has no eyes, and yet it knows exactly how we see each other and how we treat each other. And let's be clear, there is no vaccine for racism.
This has been Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
Stu Does America.
Welcome to the program. It's going to be an exciting one, I think. Now, I want you to check out the State of the Race from Friday. This is a podcast put out on our audio podcast feed, completely free, bonus podcast for you called State of the Race. And we went through the effects of the RFK Jr. endorsement, the dropout in the endorsement. What does it mean in the polls? What do the numbers look like? We went and did a deep dive on that. If you want to check that out, go to my audio page right now. First of all, follow the audio feed. How are you not following that already? But secondly, you'll get that whenever it comes out. And it's a really good one to go back on if you're kind of confused as to what does this really mean? Because there's a lot of noise out there. So, you know, every Democrat saying it means nothing, every Republican saying it's going to guarantee him the presidency. What does it actually mean? We get into that on State of the Race, available wherever you get your audio podcasts. We also have a YouTube page you may know of. You may be there right now. I mean, that would be nice of you. But if you are there, make sure to check it out. We are continuing to grow as we add, some sketch comedy stuff and live reaction commentary. So be sure to head to youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica and subscribe. Don't miss any of our stuff. We've been going live quite a bit. We went live right after the RFK Jr. speech to kind of go through it. And we will have more of that coming in the coming weeks. Jason Buttrell is going to be here to look back at Joe Biden's disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan with a lot of help from Kamala Harris that people might want to remember. We'll go into that and show you the actual clips of her from that era. Something happened in the MLB today that has never happened before in history. It is pretty amazing, and we will give you the scoop on that. But we're going to start by doing Kamala's peak question mark. I'm not sure, but maybe Kamala's peak. Did we just view it last week? Was that what we were watching? Was that the peak of her reign? Or is all hope lost? Let's get into it here. There's 10 weeks left. GOP Democrats prepare for 10-week sprint in dead even Trump-Harris race. I almost said hump terrace, which... I don't know. Whoever Terrace is will be a little disappointed in that read, or maybe excited. Who knows? I don't want to judge for Mr. Harris or Terrace. Just to give you a sense as to where we go, we've said this before. Harris had basically a 15-week election she had to deal with. She's going to try to run out the clock and not take any questions that entire time. She's gotten through the first five weeks. There's 10 left. So that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is a lot of things can change in 10 weeks. 10 weeks from now is the election, election day. 10 weeks ago was June 16th, 2024. That is about 11 days before the actual debate. So this is a period in which Joe Biden hasn't even had the catastrophic debate period yet. That hasn't even happened. Joe Biden's trailing in the election, but it's pretty close. He, of course, goes on to blow the debate and get drop out and assassination attempts and Kamala Harris rollouts and RNC and DNC. All that's packed into that 10-week period. So lots can change, but let me give you a picture kind of where we are right now. Now, one of the things going on now is Donald Trump Hump and Terrace are going back and forth over debate rules as ABC matchup looms. Now, Trump is trying, this is basically about a mute button, and it's hilarious because of the way this actually works out. Trump went into that first debate with Biden wanting to be able to say whatever he wants, whenever he wants. And Biden was like, no, we got to mute him so he doesn't get in my way. He doesn't step all over me, doesn't interrupt me. So Trump was like, all right, I want to get you on stage, so I'll agree to that. Now, Harris actually wants Trump to speak over her. Why? Well, she feels like Donald Trump will say something that's a mistake that she can focus on. And honestly, she wants to stop talking. She doesn't want to say anything. So she wants Donald Trump speaking all over her. She can just stop and act annoyed and be this indignant person. So they've now flipped sides. Donald Trump now rooting for the mute button. Kamala Harris rooting against it. No word at all about how Hump or Terrace feels on the issue, but we may look into that later. It's fascinating to look at this because if you kind of go where we are right now, this is not a normal campaign by any means. I just described to you what's happened over the past 10 weeks. It is freaking bonkers. But in the 38 days, I think now, since Kamala Harris took over the nomination, she has done zero interviews. She has done zero press conferences. She's done basically a lot of zero and yet has been treated as if she's the savior of the country. To kind of put an exclamation point on this, this is her website right now, and you see this, let's win this. We know that's a policy of hers. That I guess that's the first one we've heard about, because when you look at the top there, there's a bunch of different headlines there. There's meet Kamala Harris, meet Tim Walz, take action, store, and donate. Of course, donate being the most prominent button there. They want your money, that's for sure. Two of the five buttons are give us money, and then there's meet Kamala, meet Tim Walz, and take action, basically do something for us. And here's biographies of our candidates. Nowhere in there do you see, you know, a policy. And you'd think that the media wouldn't take Kamala's side in this little situation and call her out and say, hey, where are your freaking policies? Hey, can you do an interview with somebody? Even if it's a friendly source, can you talk? Can we at least judge what you're doing here? They're doing everything they can to stay out of your faces because they know when Kamala gets in your face, Kamala's going to lose. So why is the media constantly taking Kamala's side other than the fact that they obviously want Kamala to win? Let me give you an example of how hypocritical the media is being right now. This is a story from CNN. Trump claims not to know who is behind Project 2025, but a CNN review found at least 140 people who worked for him are involved. And you know the Project 2025 story. We've done it a decent amount since, we talked about it back in the day when it was first being formed. But maybe we'll do another monologue on it this week because I do think it's important. But basically what happened was the Heritage Foundation, a think tank, which is not Donald Trump's like hometown think tank. It's just a conservative think tank trying to influence policy, decided, hey, if Trump's going to win, we should try to come up with a policy platform of ideas to try to pitch to him. Maybe he'll do some of them. What do we want done with the country? This is the central function of a think tank. Right? Like this has been happening. Heritage Foundation has been doing this back to the Reagan administration and beyond. You come up with a bunch of ideas that you want done. The Cato Institute does this, right? The Cato Institute comes up with libertarian policies. They then pitch them to everybody who will listen, right? They want these things implemented. That's what think tanks do. And the Heritage Foundation is a think tank. So they come up with this big, long, you know, couple hundred pages of policy proposals, ideas, thoughts, potential policies, regulations, all of these things. And this is completely independent from Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not involved in this process. He has people who've worked for him, but he also had people who work for him who are voting for Kamala Harris. Like lots of people work for him and they all do different things now. They're not working for him because he's no longer president of the United States. So they come up with this big list of policies. Donald Trump comes out and says, I don't know what's even in there, honestly. And I've seen some of the policies. Some of them sound pretty good. Some of them sound pretty bad. It's not my thing. I don't want anything to do with it. You know, leave me alone with Project 2025. From the beginning, he has said he has disavowed it and said he does not want anything to do with it. And they keep hanging this on him over and over and over again. They hang him on this policy. They hang him on it, even though he's outwardly dismissed it and disavowed it to the extent that they closed it down. They closed down the entire project. They basically fired the guy who was the head of it. Honestly, I kind of feel bad for Heritage and the people involved in this because there's nothing wrong with a think tank doing their job. But Trump really wanted to be distanced from that. They kind of went along with it. They're like, fine, we'll just get rid of it. If you don't want it, you know, we're trying to do this to help you. If you don't want it, we'll get rid of it. So they closed the whole thing down. It's not even a thing anymore. Yet the media holds him to every belief that's in Project 2025. On the other hand, Kamala Harris did an entire presidential campaign where the words came out of her mouth that she believed things like single payer health care, like, opening up the borders. There's a million of these things we've already talked about. Then in the middle of the night, She has some intern email the New York Times and say, yeah, she doesn't believe that anymore. Period. And we're just supposed to believe that now. They don't hang those beliefs on her at all. They don't hold her to her 2019 beliefs at all, to the extent that the media will actually come out and fact check Trump for even bringing up Kamala Harris's own campaign. They will do the bidding of the actual campaign and fight with Donald Trump or J.D. Vance and say, I can't believe you're saying that. You're lying. She, in 2019, she had that, but she no longer believes that. Well, why? What makes you believe that she doesn't believe that anymore? Some intern? Why doesn't she say it if she doesn't believe it anymore? Why won't she say it? Because she's trying to have the best of both worlds and the media is allowing it. Why is she, the AP had this headline that basically said something like, why is Kamala Harris the incumbent vice president, but also the change candidate? How is she having it both ways? Because you're letting her have it both ways. That's how this works. You're just allowing her to escape the entire process here. Now, they're going to try to keep her in the basement for as long as possible. And, you know, you can go through all of this and figure out why you believe what, you know, what is happening is going on. But let me give you an example of how you should fight back against this. OK, and you'll notice John Carl, the media member here, taking the position of the Kamala Harris campaign, taking these emails sent in the middle of the night. Instead of just actually talking about what Kamala Harris, the candidate, has actually said, here is this battle. And this is textbook. This is what everybody should be doing when they're going on these shows. Call them out on the premise of these questions. Call them out. Watch.
She said when she ran for president that she wants to eliminate private health insurance on the job. Well, 170 million Americans, John.
Yeah, I mean that is not her position now. She knows.
How do you know that's not her Medicare position? How do you know that's not her position?
I mean, she says she no longer supports Medicare for all.
She has not said that. Okay. Maybe anonymous aides on a Friday night have said that. So again, you would have thought watching the Democratic convention last week that the Democrats are not in office, that they're not in power, that they're campaigning against an incumbent Republican, when in reality, she's been part of the failures of the Biden-Harris administration for 4 years. And when she campaigned for president in her own right, she did, in fact, promise things like decriminalizing illegal immigration and taking away health insurance.
But that's a position she's clearly changed on, and she said she has changed. Yes,
no,
she has.
No, she has not said that.
Hello? She's not said that. That's something she's obviously changed if she said that. No, she hasn't said that. How do you not know it? How do you not know that she hasn't said that? How do you not know it? How do you not know it? You have to know it. Either you're lying or you're so ill-informed. And I don't believe that with John Carl. I think John Carl, look, if you have the range of journalists there, he's not at the bottom of it, at least. He's in the middle somewhere. He's not the best journalist, but he's not the worst. He knows that. He has to know it. She hasn't disavowed any of these positions. And the media is arguing that she has. Yet they're holding Donald Trump to Project 2025, which he has never said he supported. The only things he said about it are negative. It's absolutely incredible, the hypocrisy that's going on. Now, as far as her not doing any interviews or any press conferences or anything else, the best possible take you can give the media, and they don't deserve the best possible take. But like, you can argue that if you're Kamala Harris, and if she had made this argument, it probably would have worked, is look, normally you have a year to set up a campaign. I got to do it in a month. So I'm taking the next month. We're going to do all the behind the scenes stuff. We're going to get through our convention. And then I'm going to be everywhere doing interviews, making sure all the policies are out there. But you got to give me a little bit of time to ramp this thing up. You know, it's not really true, but it would have been mildly believable. At least there would have been an excuse out there. She hasn't even offered an excuse when she was asked about it. And I want to say asked about it, but it's in the very most hesitant case I use that term, because in reality, she was kind of like, it was a passing thing at a plane. And she said, well, we'll do an interview by the end. Well, sorry, we will schedule an interview by the end of the month. By the way, what's the date? Anyone know the date? It's August 26th, right? Am I right on that? 26th? We got 5 days until the end of the month. Where's this interview? Now, she did, to be fair, say she would just schedule it. So she might schedule it for 2036, for all we know. But I would at least like to know it's on the freaking calendar. Can we do that? Can we get there? With 10 weeks left in the election, can she guarantee an interview by 2036? That's what I'd like to know. That's my first demand of the Kamala Harris administration or campaign. Now, look, maybe the media will start picking things up. Maybe they're feeling the pressure. I think at some level they are. But they're treating her like she is this superstar candidate. And I sort of made this comparison a little bit online, but let me pitch it to you here. If you know anything about basketball, they're trying to make Kamala Harris out to be Steph Curry. And she's not Steph Curry. She's not an all-timer. She's not a top 10 basketball player of all time when it comes to politics. She's more like Steph Curry's brother, Seth Curry. Seth Curry is a decent player in the NBA. If you run him off a couple of, you know, media-related screens and get him open threes, Seth Curry's going to knock him down. He's a really good shooter. He's a rotational player, a good player in the NBA, but nothing special, not like a superstar like his brother. Well, you know, if that situation happens, and Seth Curry's played on the Mavs, he's played on a bunch of different teams, and watching him play, what you have to do to get him out of his game is you have to push him off of his spots. You can't keep him comfortable, right? You have to make sure that he's not taking open three-pointers over and over and over again. The media is not going to help with this. They're going to do everything they can to make her more wide open at the three-point line. You have to push her off of her spots. You have to make her uncomfortable. You have to figure out a way to get her in front of people in situations where she is off the cuff and off balance. And yes, the debate is one of those things. I don't care what she wants to do with the microphones. Get her on television, standing there, answering questions she kind of doesn't know are coming. Put her in uncomfortable positions. Say, how about this? I will do a debate every week on every net, on any network you want, with any moderator you want. I mean, I would be that broad if I were Donald Trump right now. You got to have confidence you can beat Kamala Harris in a debate. She's a moron. Get her out there. Get her speaking, because that's what people need to see. It is on, at this point, the Trump campaign and Donald Trump himself, but the Trump campaign to figure out ways to push Kamala Harris off of her spots, to get her into situations where she's uncomfortable, where she's not open, where she's trying to beat you off the dribble, because most likely she's going to turn it over if she's trying to do that. You need to make sure she is uncomfortable in these moments, and you need to figure out ways to do it. I'll give you one. Every single rope line that she walks down should have a Joe the Plumber in it. Somebody who is going to ask her a question that is, you know, not a gotcha, something honest, something to put her in a position where she just has to answer it. Something. One of your people should be in every one of those lines. Every single time you can push her into a situation where she is uncomfortable, you need to be able to do it. And there's sort of this like defeatist attitude on the conservative part right now, which is basically we're screwed over. We're dead. She's got too much momentum. This is going to change. I'll mention again, 8 weeks ago was the debate. We've got 10 weeks. I mean, things change in 10 weeks. They change really, really quickly. And Kamala will get a nice bump out of the convention. You know, every election model, including the ones that I've screwed around with, always have a convention bump in them. You have to sit back and look at it and say, all right, well, they're going to get some bump out of that. It's basically unfettered positive news. The only people who didn't really get that was Donald Trump, because immediately after their convention, the entire race was turned around when Joe Biden turned out or dropped out. But like, you know, normally you get a bump out of your convention. So I would expect her to get some really good polling this week. But think about it this way. Even with all of the incredible media attention Kamala Harris has had now for 38 days, she's up by about 2.5 points. Looking at it the other way, with all the positive attention Joe Biden, or the negative attention Joe Biden received for, what, a month after that debate, he was only down about 3. I mean, if you really look at this race, the entire range of outcomes is probably Trump +4 to Trump -4. Somewhere in there, this election's going to fall. And most of those outcomes, Trump wins. Trump has a much better chance of winning while losing the popular vote than Harris does. So that's a good thing if you are a Donald Trump fan. And I just want to remind you one more time who Kamala Harris is, because we forget. I mean, we go to veepthoughts.com. You can remind yourself that way. But Kamala Harris is famous for having these boomlets and falling off. Let's go back to her 2019 campaign for a minute. This is from The Economist. These are polls of this is a polling outcome, a range over the entire campaign. And what you look at here is you see distinctively she had two bursts. When she started off, she went from nowhere up to third place behind only Biden and Bernie Sanders. And then she dropped off. And then she came back. She had that big debate moment where she called Joe Biden a racist. And she came up again, all the way up to third place, around 10, 11, 12%. Some polls had her as high as 20% in the race and in second place. Okay, well, you got that going on. I mean, it seems like she's really doing well. And then people get to know her a little bit and she just fades away. That is her pattern. In the betting markets, it was even more. I mean, this is more measuring vibes, right, than polls. It was even more an incredible jump for her. In fact, when she kicked off the campaign, she was in first place at like 23% chance to win. She then fell off, had that debate moment, rose all the way back up, passing Joe Biden into first place again. Up around almost 30% chance of winning the primary. And then, of course, she descended into nowhere and didn't even make it to Iowa. She is known for failure. She has these nice big moments where she's planned and she's on target with her pacing and she knows where she's going and it's very scripted. She does very well there. Remember, even the debate moment she had that went really well was her memorizing a little insult in a story about Joe Biden. These are things that she can do. She is not the worst in the world. She is not Joe Biden. In the basketball analogy, you could sit back, you could back off, and you could watch Joe Biden shoot from the outside and just watch the air balls sail out of bounds. She's not going to do that. She's not that bad. She is bad, but she's not that bad. I mean, she's not Angel Reese bad. This is a situation where you have a candidate that is capable of doing the basics, and to beat her, you've got to push her into a situation where she has to do more than the basics. If you let her sit here and you don't figure out a way to do that, and it's not easy to do because you don't have the media, but if you don't figure out a way to do that, you will lose. That's what's going to happen to the conservative movement here and Donald Trump and Republicans and everybody involved. We're going to be hung a big L on the board. You have to figure out a way to get her in front of people. And the easiest way to do that is get people who are not your campaign members out there asking her questions, if you can do it. And number two, grow the number of debates. I know he's pitched three. Pitch 70. How many can you do? Can you do one a day? Let's do one at 5 p.m. every single day. Whatever you want to do, I'm in. That is the approach. And of course, you got to figure out innovative ways to do it online. Goad her, taunt her, make her come to the table and actually act like a real freaking candidate. Because when she's revealed, that is when you will easily win. Bird flu is back in the news. Thank God. You know, it's been a long time since we talked about bird flu. There are new cases popping up right now. It would be good for you to be prepared for that. Not necessarily even because you're going to get bird flu, although, you know, who knows? I mean, people have gotten it. But just because when that stuff happens, people rush to the pharmacy, they clear out those pharmacies. So how do you have the medication that you need for basic stuff like antibiotics? How do you get that? Well, the Jace case is a great way to do it. It is a personalized emergency kit that contains essential antibiotics and medications that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. Provides 5 life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. And there are add-on options, too. Tamiflu is a great one because, of course, if you get the certain types of flu, Tamiflu is really, really in demand. It certainly will be this flu season. Jace is hosting an exclusive giveaway where you can win a free Jace case for life. One Jace case every year for the rest of your life. You'll be more prepared than anybody you know. There's no purchase necessary to enter, so don't miss out. Giveaway is only running until August 31st, so make sure you get entered today. Jace.com/Stu, Jace.com/Stu. If you're ordering a Jace case, you can enter the code STU at checkout. You'll get a discount on the order as well. Promo code is STU at Jace.com, Jace.com/STU. It's the Jace case from Jace Medical.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
You may notice this occasionally on this program, but I am not a huge fan of the Biden-Harris administration. I don't like their policies. I don't think they've done a good job. And I can sit here and have ranted on every one of the topics where they have failed. But nothing is going to piss me off more than this. In fact, what I would argue here is the Afghanistan withdrawal is enough. That's it. That is enough. Just Afghanistan is enough to never put any of these people anywhere near the presidency. It is one of the biggest embarrassments and disgraces in the history of this country, and probably the largest foreign affairs failure in my lifetime, for sure. I want to bring in somebody who actually knows something about this stuff, though. Jason Buttrell, he's head writer and researcher for Glenn Beck here at Blaze Media. Jason, you served in the military. You remember this day. I don't know if America remembers it, though. It was 3 years ago today. We are withdrawing from Afghanistan. It does not go well. And if we can't hold this administration responsible for that, I almost like want to give up on the nation.
In a normal world, it would, they just would give up at that point right there and just announce none of them were running again in the next election. Any normal world, it was that bad. You're absolutely correct. I was just watching just today. They were having a ceremony for the 13 fallen service members. Only Donald Trump showed up. No other former president, of course not Biden, not Harris. None of them bothered to even show up. I mean, just think about that. Just think about that. Like, right, like you can admit that you were wrong. I know you don't want to admit that you were wrong on that because it looks so awful. But to not even just pay your respects, that is just beyond. I just cannot imagine what it takes for someone's soul to be that dark.
And what would happen to him if he showed up, though? I mean, he would get booed and confronted, and that's probably why he doesn't do it.
Right.
It doesn't mean he shouldn't do it.
Oh, for the families, at the very least, to show that you respect the people that you commanded during that time. I can't, as someone that actually fought there, you know, seeing all that happen in real time was just so surreal. Seeing the new developments now that we're seeing from the Taliban just released those new, what they call them, I can't remember what the laws that they called them. But, you know, basically women, you know, fully covered and
can't speak in public.
Can't stare at some people or, I don't know, it's just the weirdest stuff. No education. It's all going back to the way it was. And I remember, so for anyone that doesn't know, my unit was the first conventional ground unit in Afghanistan. And it was, we took a base in southern Afghanistan in Helmand Province, which was really crazy later in the war. But I can remember doing a mobile patrol, getting on the main freeway that led into Kandahar in southern Afghanistan, one of their biggest cities. I think it was the second biggest city. And the Taliban were just, they were leaving in droves, trying to get out of Kandahar and go into hiding, probably go to Pakistan, who knows where, just to get out of there. And you knew that every single one of them we were going to be fighting later. But we were setting up roadblocks and checking to see if we could find any people on the deck of cards, see if we can spot any of the known guys.
Forgot about the deck of cards, yeah.
And I remember there was one family in particular. We were driving in a long line. It was bumper to bumper traffic going in, trying to get to Kandahar on the main freeway. It was not a good security situation, thinking back on it. But I remember passing this one car, and it was a bunch of guys that looked very suspicious, and two females in full-on burkas. And one of the females had, you know, the bad luck of kind of tilting her head, looking at all the military equipment as it was rolling down the road. And the guy that was with her elbowed her straight in the head. Looked like it just totally knocked her out, you know. And I was like, we felt like that's kind of one of the things we were fighting for. We were fighting to destroy the Taliban. But that was one of the things that we were fighting on right there. And that felt good at the moment. Not that, but liberating people from that behavior.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And to see it just all go back to the way it was, it's a gut punch. It's a gut punch.
Yeah, it was almost for a very long time one of the things you could kind of fall back on, because we did have, obviously, not everything went well there. It lasted a very long time. It wasn't efficiently run at times. We had our ups and downs in Afghanistan up until Biden. But you could always fall back on the situation was clearly better for the women there, clearly better for the children there, clearly better for the people in the situation. Now, did they make it as good as did they create a bunch of, democracies with democracy with McDonald's on every corner that I would have preferred? No, they didn't do that. But, you know, it's still better. Now it's the same or worse than it was. And we spent obviously an ungodly amount of money, but in retrospect, who cares compared to the amount of people we lost there? And it's like, to let that just go for no reason, to let it go for absolutely no reason, and to watch last week when they're parading our military equipment through the streets, we didn't even take the time to remove that or blow it up or something so that they couldn't use it.
it's just a, it's a disgrace that is beyond all other topics, I think, with this. Like, look, the economy can be difficult at times. I'm not giving any excuses, but like the economy, sometimes the president gets too much blame for an economy. You're the commander in freaking chief here. This was your decision. This is all Biden and Harris. They own all of it. Harris was there. She knew about it. She was the last person in the room. I just don't understand why this isn't a big deal, bigger deal.
Yeah, from, I mean, I think back to the beginning, and I'm a big, I guess, critic on a lot of the military actions that we get into nowadays. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I've changed a lot since back in the day. But when you don't have a clear mandate, a clear mission, like, say, for instance, what's happening in Ukraine right now, there is none. Like, there's no end game to that.
For us, at least.
For us, yeah. We're just in it, and we're like, I don't know, you know, till whenever. We had a clear mandate in the beginning, and that was to destroy Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and to kick out the Taliban. That was our mandate. We did that. It was done.
For years.
For years. The problem after that was, you know, well, then we went into nation building mode. Oh, let's recreate this little democracy, you know, in a place that, you know, didn't even want it to begin with. Mm-hmm. We were putting all these, you know, famous militia leaders, these warlords in power and saying, here you go. This is the country you always wanted. You know, congratulations. You got it. That was never going to end well. But the strategy should have changed after, you know, our original goals were completed. It should have changed. I ran into a buddy that worked for a military contractor group. He told me the story that always just used to piss me the heck off. But he was talking about how he was out there to protect, in Afghanistan, to protect foreign dignitaries as they went into the country, not too long after the war was over. And this would have been probably like around 2005, something like that, 2006. And they were talking about these tens of millions of dollars that was going to this like apple orchard that was supposed to sustain life out there, to give jobs. You know, they were creating all these jobs for these Afghans. They'd stop, you know, using their farming skills on opium, which that happened a lot out there. Stuff like that. Give them something to do.
Yeah.
Well, tens of millions of dollars, congressman went out there to go see it. It was all great. There was about 10 workers out there, whatever. Well, all of that ended up, as soon as the official visit was over, all of the crops withered and died out there because they didn't care about it. But that's just a kind of a small little sampling of the just insane amount of money we've wasted in that region trying to say, look, we didn't do all bad. You know what I mean? Like, we helped in some way. It's just ridiculous. And then in the withdrawal, all these bases that we're talking about that we lost, and all this equipment that you talked about that, you know, they're now parading around, those aren't just random bases where we just showed up and said, we're going to create a base here. Most of those bases were bought in blood. People died, you know, taking those locations. Friends of mine, you know, people that, you know, American service members that wanted to make a difference, did make a difference. They established their goals, and now it was just taken away in the most dishonorable way I can think of. It's mind-boggling. Boggling. I can't imagine anyone surviving this politically. It's just absolutely insane.
Yeah,
it's just hard to even talk about. I don't even know what to say about it.
It's true. The Associated Press had a headline today that said something like, you know, Kamala Harris is the sitting vice president and she's the change candidate. How is she having it both ways? And of course, it's because you're letting her have it both ways. Like that, you're the media. You're the Associated Press. You're allowing it to happen. I want to make sure though that
she was the stated last person in the room.
Yeah, last person in the room. Let me play that clip for people because I think, you know, you. We, in our mind at the time was Joe Biden, understandably. That's, you know, he was the sitting president of the United States, the commander in chief. But she went out of her way to take credit for the decision and how Afghanistan occurred. Let me play you the clip. Watch.
You just made a really big decision. Afghanistan.
Yes.
Were you the last person in the room?
Yes.
And you feel comfortable?
I do. And I'm going to add to that. This is a president who has an extraordinary amount of courage.
Mm,
And it was incredibly brave to run for the hills and leave all your equipment behind and all of our allies behind and let Glenn Beck, you know, evacuate thousands of people. That was really courageous.
Have we ever seen any kind of initiative like what happened after that? The scramble from private citizens. Mm. Like, we're all screaming as this is going down. I mean, and it's not like they didn't know this was going to happen. Yeah. Like, the Taliban is massed out there. They have intelligence that shows what's about to happen. And it's like they just completely ignored it. Like, yeah, screw it. You know, like, yeah, we're going to take a few losses, whatever. It's just like they just accepted the fact. But, I mean, yeah. I've never seen that, where you have all these former military people who are like, oh, my gosh, I guess we have to do this now because the government's not doing anything?
It was kind of a Dunkirk version. It was a version of Dunkirk, basically.
Right.
Right in front of our eyes, which was incredible. I mean, that is something, and by the way, a lot of people in this audience were responsible for part of that, like, by donating their money, and a lot of people were involved in that. But, like, it shouldn't have needed to happen. Like, you shouldn't have, it shouldn't be a talk show host raising money. Like, this is something the military should have done. And, like, I would have argued and did argue at the time for a continued presence in Afghanistan at some level. You know, holding the airbase, you know, there's some basic things I think we could have done there and stayed in the region to keep it under control if needed. But if you want to pull out completely, you could have done it in an orderly fashion. You could have removed the equipment or destroyed it. You could have done a hundred other things. You could have done something that didn't cost 13 of our servicemen's life. You could have done something that didn't have Afghans hanging off of tires as our planes were taking off. It is remarkable that only 3 years later, the society in general seems to have forgotten this. And I will say, even Democrats at the time were they could not believe what was going on. They, you know, the polls for Joe Biden, that's when they sank. He was still in the high 40s. They went dropped in the mid 30s. That's when that happened. People were disgusted by that. But the fact that 3 years later, it's not even an issue is just unforgivable.
Yeah. The concept of a strategic withdrawal is not a new one that we just thought of, right. you know, 3 years ago. That's not something new. This happens all the time. Anytime you're pulling out of a region like that, there is a plan. It's not like there is hordes of people, you know, right there on your border and they're overrunning you and it's like, oh, crap. This was something that had been in the works through diplomatic channels for a while. So and we still have not been given an adequate explanation for at what point did that break? Or did they just say, hey, we're going now? Like, it was telegraphed. It's not like they did not see this. So it's gross incompetence on an insane level.
Yeah. I was going back.
They haven't answered for it.
They haven't. I know. I went back and was looking for a clip of something that we had played on an earlier show, and I was searching for stuff about Afghanistan. You were on one of the shows right after this happened. We were talking about this exact thing, and I feel like sitting here with you 3 years later, we have no more answers. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still completely inexplicable, and we're just supposed to be like, hey, let's give the person who is the last person in the room a chance at 8 years as commander in chief in this country. It is unfathomable that anyone would even consider voting for her just because of this one incident. Yeah. Well, you have the last word.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's the strategy of this administration in a nutshell on everything. Anytime there's a crazy mistake, a disaster, a catastrophe, they just pretend that it never happened. Mm-hmm. And I cannot believe, and that's what makes this so much worse, if it wasn't for all of the lives lost, all of the suffering, Afghans and Americans, both, all of that suffering, and their solution is to pretend it never happened. How are you a voter right now considering Harris, and that is not at the very top of your list of, yeah, but this happened? That I do not get it. And if you let this go, how many more are going to happen in the future? And that's probably even the scariest part, because the world is on fire right now.
Yeah. And we seem to be getting into more and more wars. It seems to be part of the design of this administration to enter us into more conflicts when they have absolutely no idea not only how to end them, but how to fight them in the first place.
Any other country that have gone into something like this, they would not have recovered from it. I mean, we are blessed by God to be in the situation that we are in, with the power we're in, the geographic location we're in. We can make these mistakes, tragically. But any other country in the world would not be able to. They'd have been done.
It's incredible. Please remember, there's a documentary out about Joe Biden. It's called The Decision, I think. It's Frontline, like a PBS Frontline documentary. most of it is just like boring biographical information about Joe Biden. It's like very straight, you know, it's not certainly not a conservative piece by any means. I encourage you just to go back and watch. It's about two thirds of the way in. There's maybe 10 minutes straight about Afghanistan and the withdrawal. Go back and put yourself in that situation for a minute today. Go back and remind yourself about what it was like going through that and watching that unfold, watching these poor people's lives be destroyed because of our idiot president and his idiotic vice president. Go back and watch that, experience it a little bit, because if that doesn't shake you back into reality, if you're considering, God forbid, a vote for Kamala Harris, I don't know what will. I don't know what will. I mean, it's hopeless. You're hopeless if you can't figure that one out. It should be really easy. Jason Buttrell, head writer and researcher for Glenn Beck. Thanks so much for your service, of course. I mean, you're no Tim Walz.
I gotta say. That's a good point.
That's a great point. You're not to that level, but we still thank you anyway, and thanks for coming on the program.
Thanks.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.
Where is Kamala Harris from? If you said she's a daughter of Oakland, you heard her speech the other night, but you would be, you know, wrong. She, of course, grew up in Berkeley, California. She's got a nice yellow house in Berkeley, California. They try to make her out to be this, like, you know, Oakland, they're giving this idea of like, oh, she was coming up from the mean streets of Oakland. And she was freaking living in Berkeley. Relax, okay? And of course, the reason she doesn't want to say the Berkeley thing is because it's the most liberal area in the United States, and it makes her sound, what she is, very, very liberal. Now, the story from the New York Times is not, can you believe that she's lying about her biography or misleading people about her biography? She was technically born in Oakland Hospital, so you can sort of kind of defend it, maybe. No, it is, you can understand it. She's trying to win the election. She can't let people know she's from Berkeley. That's the tone of the entire article. People, they're interviewing people in Berkeley going, we get it. We don't want her to even say it, you know. And I said, like, that's kind of the tone of it. It's almost like they're saying she's got an election to win. Don't look at her actual facts. And then I get this article from the Toronto Star. Forgive Kamala Harris for downplaying her formative years she spent in Montreal. She has an election to win. They're just coming out and just saying it. This girl from Berkeley and Montreal is trying to be like, I'm a heartland member of this country. That's me. It's just completely absurd, but it fits absolutely perfectly with the guy that she picked for vice president. Sure, we complain about the country sometimes, but I'm still proud to be here. I'm proud to be an American, or at least I know I'm free. That means if you come after me or my family, I'm going to be ready. That's what you do. When you're an American, that's what you do. You're self-reliant, or at least you're supposed to be. That's why I rely on my Patriot Supply to help me be self-reliant, because being self-reliant is really hard to do on your own. And I know that sounds like a contradiction, but once you buy the stuff from my Patriot Supply, then you just have it in your house and you're self-reliant from that point forward. Until then, I'd use their help. Their mega 3-month emergency food kit comes jam-packed with 33 varieties of filling and delicious foods. You know, creamy chicken flavored rice, old-fashioned Italian spaghetti, savory chicken broccoli soup. You also get the bonus protein kit with diced beef, flavorful chicken chunks, and 3 varieties of beans, plus 9 different fruits and vegetables and snacks as well. All in all, the emergency food kit provides a whopping 2,500 calories per day to keep you well-fed and ready for anything. It's your duty as an American and someone who, as a father or a mother, you want to protect your family without waiting for handouts from the government. And that starts with you and your food that you have in your home and you can depend on for up to 25 years. You can get that at preparewithstew.com. Preparewithstew.com. Right now you can save $300 off your mega 3-month emergency food kit. Ships fast and free. Preparewithstew.com. Preparewithstew.com. Save $300 right now. Preparewithstew.com. So a couple of months ago, Toronto Blue Jays catcher Danny Jansen is at bat against the Boston Red Sox. It's an 0-1 count. And all of a sudden, the sky's just open up. Rain pours down. game is postponed. They're going to make it up in a couple months. No big deal. This stuff happens in the major leagues all the time. Except in this particular instance, after Jansen was at bat and the game was postponed, he was traded. So he can't play anymore. The big thing was he was traded to the Boston Red Sox, the opponents. So today they picked up that game with Danny Jansen catching while technically Danny Jansen was at bat for the other team. He played for both teams in the same game. It's the first time it's ever happened in Major League history like this. And it was kind of a fun thing to watch in a disastrous season for America's team, the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll see you tomorrow.